Podcast Episode Number 8.
Hey everybody, on today's show I'm going to be talking about finding freelancing jobs in Tokyo, and also listen for a special free dinner giveaway from the Bubblegum Shrimp Company. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I am your host, Anthony Joe. And on today's show, I am going to be talking to a gentleman named David Chester, who runs a website called freelancingintokyo.com. Now, many foreigners who come here, usually one of the first jobs they get is teaching English. You either get a contract in your home country and the company brings you over, or you come here and you get an English teaching job. However, David has a very interesting website and book about how to get alternative jobs to teaching English, what he calls freelancing jobs. There are a lot of other opportunities here for people who are wishing to work and live in Japan besides teaching English, and David's website is full of information about doing exactly that. So I'm going to be talking to him a little bit later on in the show. But first, I want to talk about how you can win a free meal at the Bubblegum Shrimp Company. If you've seen the movie Forrest Gump, you know what I'm talking about, because the Bubblegum Shrimp Company specializes in making American Deep South Cajun-style shrimp.
Shrimp is the fruit of the sea. You can barbecue it, boil it, broil it, bake it, saute it. There's shrimp kebabs, shrimp creole.
Their menu includes a full variety of hamburgers, salads, desserts, but their specialty is making some of the best shrimp in Tokyo.
Lemon shrimp, coconut shrimp, pepper shrimp, shrimp soup, shrimp stew, shrimp salad, shrimp and potatoes, shrimp burger, shrimp sandwich. That's about it.
Now, if you like shrimp and you want to enter this contest, here's how you do it. This is being brought to you by the Expat's Guide to Japan. And this is a fantastic resource for anyone who is new to Japan. Their website is expatsguide.jp, and they produce a free booklet that tells you basically everything you need to know about living and working in Tokyo and Yokohama. You can get this booklet for free at many embassies and bookstores have it, or you can order it directly from their website. And in it is every single thing you need to know. They've got addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, how you sort your garbage, how to do everything in Japan is in this book. And I highly recommend it because it helped me a lot when I got started here. So to enter this contest, you need to visit their Facebook page and click like on the Bubblegum Shrimp post. You click like. They will tally up all the likes and they will choose a winner from there. It's very, very simple. As a matter of fact, I will include a link from my site, tokyopodcast.com, to their Facebook page. So if you want to enter, just go to tokyopodcast.com. On the right-hand side, you'll see a banner for Bubblegum Shrimp. Click on that. It'll take you to their Facebook page and click like. But once again, if you are new to Tokyo and you're new to Yokohama, I would definitely recommend checking out expatsguide.jp. Pleased to welcome to the show today Mr. David Chester, who runs a website called freelancingintokyo.com. And on his site, he offers a lot of advice about how to get started in Tokyo, even if you're not having an English teaching job. He offers an ebook which lists many different ways that you could come to Tokyo, get started, and make the big yen, as he calls it. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you.
Now, I was interested in reading about your book because your story and my story are similar, mm-hmm. in that we both arrived here without a job lined up.
That's right.
With a backpack, a suitcase, and some yen in our pocket, and looking to make the big money.
Right.
Which is different than how most foreigners come here, who usually have a contract with an English school or a job. And everything's already lined up for them.
That's right.
So can you tell our audience a little bit about your story and what brought you to Japan?
Well, I had visited Japan. I was working as a musician initially, and I had a two-month contract here many years ago. And I thought, gee, maybe this would be an exciting place to live. So to make a long story short, I worked for a Japanese music producer in Los Angeles for a couple of years, writing songs and translating Japanese lyrics into English. And I decided that it would be much more exciting if I actually did the work in Japan. So that was my motivation for coming here. And I had a friend, an American friend, who had one room that I could share. And that's how I managed to find a place to sleep when I first came here. And I came on a tourist visa with no prospects of anything, just a big dream.
What year did you come here?
I came here in 1993 on a three-month tourist visa, and here I am 18 years later.
Wow. What was Japan like back in 1993? That was kind of near the start of the collapse of their economy, right?
Yeah, my timing maybe my timing wasn't great because the bubble had essentially evaporated, although there were still a number of people that weren't willing to accept
right.
that.
Right.
So there was a lot of work, but just in general, there was more of a for lack of a better term, there was more of a salaryman mentality. There wasn't so much what you see now. They're called freeters, where a lot of young people will just work part-time or, you know, they're not interested in the sort of corporate lifetime employment. So that's one thing that I've noticed. Japan has relaxed a lot more. I mean, and it's also become a lot more Western. I don't know if either of those things are better, but that's what it was like when I got here.
Would you say it's more gaijin friendly now?
Yeah, certain areas, certain industries, yes. Yes, I would. I mean, there seems to be a more of a consciousness about, at least as far as English speakers, let's put it that way. There seems to be more of a consciousness about the fact that that has to be embraced if they really want to, you know, compete financially. Compete in the economic way. Yes.
Well, what was the? It's interesting that you mentioned that because I read an article recently that talked exactly that, saying that you know many salarymen are working, you know, taking English lessons in the evening because the company is starting to realize that the international market is calling and that the domestic market is shrinking. What was your experience like in 93 in regards to the Japanese wanting to learn English?
I was essentially bombarded by people who wanted to speak English, and I had been studying Japanese and I really wanted to continue it, but I got so many offers to either teach English, edit English, proofread English, write English. It was just too much. I mean, I took the job opportunities because I came here without a job. So I'd say it was, it was quite full.
Wow, that's interesting.
And it has abated a little bit because I know people that have lost jobs teaching English because some companies, they don't want to learn English anymore. Now they want to learn Chinese.
Right.
But still, I think there's plenty of call for that. But yes, I was overwhelmed at the time.
I was talking to a gentleman recently I did a show with who has been here a number of years. And what surprised me was that he said that the English availability of English in Tokyo is much greater than it was just even 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
And that really surprised me because coming from Bangkok to Tokyo, to me, it seems like there's hardly any English here at all.
Well, trust me, it's much better than it was. It's much better than it was. The entire transportation system is, at least as far as people being able to see signs in English, it's much better. So,
right.
They're certainly not fully bilingual, but I think that they have made some efforts to accommodate not really the quotes gaijin that are living here, but the tourists.
Right. I found it interesting that that Japan Tourist Agency right now has this plan to bring 10,000 bloggers to Japan.
Yeah.
And, you know, having lived in Thailand, which is a very gaijin tourist-friendly country, my thinking was, you know, Japan could spend that same amount of money just making their country easier to understand.
Yeah, I think it's questionable, but that would require a whole other podcast session.
You know, having 10,000 gaijin wandering around the city getting totally lost,
right,
is not going to do much for their image.
Well, but, you know, I think, but you know, I don't know that you would get totally lost. I mean, you have to do some preparation to come here. You can't just like get off the plane and like hit the ground running. There has to be some sort of consciousness about Japan or, you know, about any city here. I mean, so if you do some preparation and, do a little research, I think it will be a lot easier. If you just get off the plane and start running around, it could be a little confusing, a little daunting. Yeah.
What was it like for you when you first got here? Were you overwhelmed with,
yes,
with Tokyo?
I was overwhelmed, but it was exciting. It was exciting in a different way, and without the English, you know, it forced me to learn things and expand my mind. I mean, it was frustrating that there wasn't as much English as maybe I wanted, but right. On the other hand, you know, it forced me to open up dictionaries and try harder. So, you know, that to me is I miss that. So so it didn't bother me. I mean, I liked that aspect of it. I had to work harder to try to understand how to do anything here. So it was okay for me. It was a whole new experience, and that was part of it.
It's funny how being an expat, some of these smallest things that you just take for granted back home can be huge challenges in a new country.
That's
but yet
right.
When you're able to do them, you feel this huge sense of accomplishment.
That's right. There are days now when I'm able to, I mean, my Japanese isn't fluent, but it's a lot better than it was. And just being able to go to an electronics store, actually, to be able to buy this headphone for this podcast and to be able to successfully communicate with the clerk, it was just like, I mean, after it was over, it was like, I actually did that whole thing in Japanese. He understood me. I got the headphone, and here we are.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's kind of a fun experience.
It was great.
So when you first got here then, without being able to speak any Japanese and with limited contacts, what did you do to start getting work?
What I did and what some people that come here still don't seem to understand is I got a meishi, which is a name card. Because the Japanese, it's very important to them. And if you've seen any, you know, movies or read any books about foreigners dealing with the Japanese, you know, them giving you their name card and the sort of little bowing ceremony and exchange that goes on with that is an important cultural thing.
Right.
So that was the first thing I did, was I got a name card with English on one side and Japanese on the other. And I sort of used those, you know, the exchanging of name cards with whoever I met, wherever I met. I started to build a network of people that I could contact to scope out job possibilities. And remember, there was no internet. And so really everything had to be done by phone call and actually at that time I would just show up at places, at companies in person and ask to speak to, you know, whoever their personnel officer was and to see if I could get work. So really I was on the street. I was on the street, and if I saw a well-dressed Westerner on the street, I would approach them. And I would tell them my name and, you know, what I could do. And I asked them if they knew where I could find work. That's what I did.
What was their reaction like?
They were totally, like, with me on it, because that's probably what people did when they first came here.
Right.
They didn't, like, say, go away or why are you bothering me? They gave me their cards. Or they suggested, you know, why don't you call this number? Or I know somebody who needs so-and-so. It was much more word of mouth, on the street. There was much more of a sense of community amongst the foreign or the English-speaking community here. That's how I got work. The first job that I had teaching English, although that wasn't what I came here to do, I met a girl at a party. We kind of chummed up, and then she said, I'm leaving Japan. I have 2 months left on my contract. You want to do it? And I said, I'm not an English teacher. And she said, it doesn't matter. And it was a major corporation. I had to go have a interview, but I got the job. And I finished her contract, the 2 month contract, and they asked me to stay for another 6 months. And I said, I'm a musician. I'm not an English teacher. And they said, sometimes personality is more important than experience. And I'll never forget that. So I said, okay, well, based on that, I'll stay. So, you know, to make that long story short, I became a much better English teacher. And I did it for a long time, but I'm still not an English teacher, but I did it and I learned a lot. So that's how I got my work when I first came here.
So what would you say then is important to put on the meishi? Obviously your name, phone number, et cetera, but web address, email address, is that all important?
Well, of course, it depends on what you're going for, what you want to do. But of course, now with the internet, I would have a website for sure, and I'd have your picture on the website. Japanese want to know what you look like. And so I would have a website, and on the card, when I was teaching English and proofreading and rewriting and editing, that's what I put. I would put English instructor, editor, rewriter. I would put things like that if that's where I thought I could make money. And because I was a musician, you know, in the beginning, I think I put all those things on my card, but I realized it was too much information. People didn't know where to focus. So in that case, I had a couple of cards made up, and I would determine which one to give to the people I was communicating with. And that seemed to work well with me. So I would have a double-sided card, one side in English, one side in Japanese. And yes, if you have a website, put it on there, plus your email address and definitely your cell phone number. That's what you need to have now to survive.
Yeah, that's what I found too, is getting a mobile phone number has been my biggest challenge so far. And I'm amazed at how many people have asked for it.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, everyone running around here with their cell phone. So if you don't have one, you're kind of person non grata.
Right, right. So first tip is get a cell phone, get a meishi.
Yeah, definitely the name card. Mm-hmm.
You kind of mentioned when you're talking about the community as if it was in the past tense. Do you feel that the English-speaking community here is not as tight as it was before?
I feel it's not as tight as, yes, that's how I feel. I mean, of course, you develop a community of friends and people will contact you. I can't make such and such a job, or can you cover for me for this? But I feel like it, you know, just in general, I mean, people are not in touch in the way that they used to be. And people, yes, I don't feel it as tight as it used to be. And I think that's as a result of the internet and everybody kind of hunkering down in their own private, you know, universes. So, yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, one thing, I've been an expat in three different countries, Germany, Thailand, and Japan. And the one thing I've noticed that all countries have in common is the expat forums. The internet chat rooms that are frequented by expats in those countries are probably one of the worst areas to hang out and get information about your new home country. They are usually filled with people who are so jaded.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some good information, but you got to wade through so much crap that it's not worth it. And you get this really negative view of your new home country.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, you're right. And it's difficult, you know, because, well, it's hard to avoid that. So you kind of have to cherry pick your way through it in order to find what you need.
Yeah, I think the thing to keep in mind with those forums is that the grumpiest person is usually the loudest, you know? So yeah, if you can kind of ignore the ones who are talking a lot, there's, you know, there's few in there that will offer you a good piece of advice. But it's a shame that to hear that that kind of community is fragmented a bit.
Well,
here in Japan,
you know, that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book because my brother's friend contacted me and asked me, he wanted to work in Japan and as a musician. And I started to write an email to him and I thought, I cannot explain this in an email. And I thought, I have all this information to offer. And instead of just, you know, giving out tidbits in email or posting it, you know, on a forum, why don't I put it together in a book? And so, and also, I also put together the monthly events because I thought it would be great to network with fellow freelancers. But I'm finding that even that seems that didn't has not come about the way that I thought it would. I mean, there have been people that have come and we've kept it going for over a year, and that's great. But either people don't understand the value of that, or a lot of people that have come, they'll have like a writing job or a teaching job or some other type of job that may not necessarily be what they want to do, but they think that's all they can do here, or that's all they've done here. And my idea was to get people together to discuss other possibilities, to exchange numbers, to find out what other people's abilities were, so that we could exchange jobs or we could alert people to different opportunities that were available. So, yeah, I'd say that the forums have some value for sure, but you kind of have to create your own network of people that you can rely on, and that's why I put together freelancing in Tokyo.
What options do you suggest for people to create that little network? You know, if obviously you have your monthly meetings,
mm-hmm.
Which are you can access from your website at freelancingintokyo.com.
Right.
And what other options are there for new people to Japan, to Tokyo specifically, to start meeting other foreigners?
Well, you know, one tool that was really helpful to me, although it's kind of changed through the years, but the Metropolis magazine, which is now, I think it's biweekly, Metropolis magazine, all in English. It's geared specifically for the foreign community and really towards expats. But it, you know, it announces events, meetings, groups, clubs, etc. And it's a good way to get a quick overview of what's available if you're, you know, if you've come here and you're friendless and you don't know where to get started. So I think that that was always a good way to find out what was going on and to see if there was a way to connect with others. And it's still good in that way. So I would suggest people follow up with that.
Okay. That's Metropolis.
Uh-huh. And they have an online website. I think it's metropolis.co.jp.
Okay. Okay. So. Yeah. That's the largest English language website in Tokyo. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know if it's
the
largest.
Or like the largest English magazine, I should say, right?
Well, I don't know if that's the situation anymore, but but it's definitely of value. They've got tons of stuff on the website, and I mention it frequently in the book because it was a very, very helpful tool to me for years and until I got myself established.
Right.
And, yeah, in fact, I ended up working for them for a period of time. Yeah. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So your book is called Freelancing in Tokyo,
uh-huh.
And can you define for our audience what exactly is a freelancer?
Well, a freelancer is someone that is not working a full-time job and this is what I understand a freelancer to be, and who can set their own hours, and someone who might work short-term contracts, and someone who might work a variety of jobs. Of course, you can work in a specific field as a freelancer, and but essentially that's what it means. It's someone who's kind of calling their own shots and not being beholden to any one company.
That's quite a contradiction to the Japanese way, right? Because they're the this is the land of lifetime employment.
It was. And I don't think it is anymore. Although, you know, there are any number of Japanese that work an incredible amount of overtime. And, of course, you know, they will stay at their companies until the end. But I don't think that's across the board anymore. And you'll find a lot more people, a lot more Japanese people that are seeking out part-time jobs or trying to establish their own companies or their own businesses, you know, their own web-based businesses. So I think it's changing. But, I mean, definitely there's an old guard here that has that kind of sensibility. And there's certainly any number of salary men, as they're called, and office ladies, as they're called, who are part of that sort of corporate image and workforce. But I think things are changing a little bit.
Can you give us some examples of these freelancing jobs?
A lot of people don't know that you can register with a, quote, talent agency for modeling work, TV work, movie work, extra work. This is a fun way to earn some extra money and possibly to develop a part-time career, for lack of a better phrase, in film and TV. And you don't have to have a background as a, you know, as an actor. Although I have found that people that do are more aggressive about it and might possibly get more work. But, you know, I mean, other than learning, having drama classes in high school, I mean, I never studied acting. But when I came here, I saw all these people doing it, and I thought, I'm going to get on the gravy train. So I've made about, I think I've made about 9 commercials since I've been here. They've all been well paid, and I was not an extra in them. I was a featured person in them. So that was a revelation to me. I got one like the first month I was here, so that was quite an eye-opener. The other type of work that's available to people, if you have any ability with writing at all, there's writing opportunities for newspapers and magazines. There's any number of companies that require a native English speaker to proofread, rewrite, edit their company documents or their websites. All of those, you know, they don't, I mean, some of those could be full-time jobs, but I mean, I've done a lot of that work through the years, and they've all been just sort of like one-off assignments, but they're frequent, and they're from this, I've built up quite a clientele, so I mean, that it can be great work. Another opportunity that people completely overlook, and I know that I'll be crucified for this, but there's the voiceover industry in Japan. And it's not called voiceovers, it's called narrators. And there's work available for people that have qualified speaking voices that can read a script with some sort of level of intelligence. And those are some quick examples. And of course, if you're a musician, there's work available for you there. If you have any sort of specialty, which people don't think about, like if you know how to teach dance or any sort of arts or crafts or something like that, or cooking, those kind of things are also available to you. You kind of have to pursue those yourself. But I've taught classes in screenwriting and songwriting and, of course, offered music lessons as well. And those are things that people overlook because they'll get an English teaching job and they won't think about anything else, which still surprises me, but it still happens.
Let me go back to something you said a little bit earlier about getting into television and commercials. Is that still a viable option? Because, you know, everyone who's thought about coming over here, I'm sure in the back of their mind has heard the rumor that, you know, you land, you get a TV gig, and you're instantly famous because you're a foreigner. Maybe not to that extent, but isn't this country awash in out-of-work actors just like Hollywood is?
I don't know if it's awash in out-of-work actors, and but you're definitely not going to land and – well, I don't want to say you're not going to land and not get become famous. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's a good question, but let's put it this way. A lot of foreigners came here. A lot of foreigners got work in TV and film. I don't think it's anywhere like it was. And yes, there are a lot of foreigners that have been here for a long time still trying to get that work. But you register with an agency and they call you, you go to an audition, you get the job or you don't. I mean, I wouldn't count on it as a living. I would. That's why I put it under a freelance category, because it's, you know, every now and then I get called, I go to an audition, I get a job. It's a fair amount of money for a day's work, and it's great. But if that's your goal in life is to be an actor, then I would not come to Japan unless for some reason you have a dying need to do it in Japanese.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, yes, those – that sort of – that bubble-esque sort of thing is no longer here. But there's still plenty of opportunities. You just have to go out and find them.
The era of Charisma Man is no longer, huh?
I don't think it is. I mean, you might find pockets of it. You might find occasional experiences of it. But I think it's essentially over. But that doesn't mean that people shouldn't come here to pursue, you know, to pursue things. They can still have a great time.
Now, in reading your book, many of the jobs that you have listed revolve around being able to speak English.
Uh-huh.
What would you say to someone who's thinking about coming to Japan and perhaps they aren't a native speaker of English?
Well, you know, I wrote the book and I specifically say it's for native English speakers. So if you don't speak English, I mean, if it's not your native language, it doesn't mean that you can't come here and find work. You know, you could obviously find work teaching your own language, whatever that is, if there's a call for it. And but, you know, I have Italian friends, French friends, German friends that have done just fine here in Japan. I mean, what I offered in the book was based on what my experiences and the experiences of fellow native English speakers. So I cannot, you know, specifically answer for people that are not native English speakers, but still there is work here if you, you know, you have to do your own research. So I can't really answer that question, but for native English speakers, there's still plenty of work.
And there might actually be more opportunities for them. I had a friend in Thailand who's a French guy who lived mm-hmm. in Japan for 4 years teaching mm-hmm. French.
That's right.
And he actually did extremely well because he was the only one in his whole town that spoke French and was teaching it.
Mm-hmm. There's that as well. I mean, you know, if we went back in time and there was like one English speaker in a village, you know, teaching people, I mean, that person would be the most popular person in town because that's what they wanted to learn. A lot of those people went on to open schools, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, and to build careers out of that. So, yeah, you're right. A person like that, that may not be in Tokyo, but it depends. I mean, if there's a company that's dealing with France or Germany or some other country that doesn't speak English and they need that kind of a speaker, there's work.
Right. And also he told me, too, that the Japanese people – they're quite interested in learning languages other than English. Certainly, almost all of them are interested in learning English, but Japanese are starting to travel a lot internationally, and they're interested in learning many other languages. So if you can, you know, speak those other languages, you have a little market to yourself because the competition isn't as strong.
That's probably true. I mean, I can't comment on that with, you know, 100% knowledge, but I would say that is probably true.
So let me ask you then, you've been here since 1993. If mm-hmm. you were starting all over again,
mm-hmm.
and you landed at Narita Airport with mm-hmm. your suitcase and tourist visa, mm-hmm. what would you do differently now than what you did before?
That is a really, really excellent question. Well, I think if I was to do things differently, I would make sure that I had a college degree, because I don't. I had a degree from a music school, but it was not a recognized university, and it made it very difficult initially for me to get my visa. If I had the college degree, it would have made it that much – I would have gotten the visa without an issue. So that's one thing that I would have done differently. The other thing I would have done differently is I probably would have tried to find my own place to live. But of course, I couldn't because I didn't know whether the visa was going to be approved or not.
Right.
So, you know, it's a difficult question because so much has changed. So probably having a college degree and speaking more Japanese, I think those two things would have made my ride here a little bit smoother in the beginning.
And still quite relevant today, correct? Having a college degree and speaking Japanese still to today is going to make your transition here a lot smoother.
Well, you know, the Japanese, and rightfully so, how are they going to determine whether or not you're qualified to live and work in this country? They need some barometer. Right. That's what the it's either a college degree or they want to see 10 years of experience in a certain, you know, certified experience in a certain field. And why shouldn't they? So, I mean, if you're here to work and not just fool around and have fun, then you need to have something to back you up. So yes, those would be of value. And I cannot underline enough that speaking as much Japanese as you can would make your experience here so much smoother. Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. So let me ask you then, you know, people say someone's in their home country in the West and they're thinking about coming here, looking on the news, and they see a lot of negative about Japan. The economy is down. They see that many people can't find work. There's possibly cancer-causing radiation floating around everywhere, earthquakes happening all the time. Would you still recommend to someone that Tokyo and Japan is a good opportunity?
Let's put it this way. After the earthquake and all the media, you know, hysteria about radiation, et cetera, a lot of Westerners in particular left Tokyo. And at that point, they were called fly genes. And but almost all of them have returned. Now, why is that? Because the economy is booming and everything is settled and there aren't going to be any more earthquakes? No. I'd say that, you know, they have come here. They've experienced what Japan has to offer. They like it. And they want to continue living the lifestyle that they've established themselves here. I wouldn't say that any of those things should dissuade you. But I would say that you should check with your embassy, and you should keep, you know, you should be aware of what's going on here. And if you have concerns, I mean, if you're young or you have a child, or you know, those are things that are things that are on your mind, you might think twice about it because, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a radiologist. I can't answer that. But I don't think any of those things have stopped people from coming here. I came back from England about 15 days ago, and the entire plane was filled with people headed for Tokyo. And I thought, why is everybody coming here if all these things are, you know, in the air and everyone's concerned? It did drop off for a while. It did seem like, okay, it's all over with and, you know, let's pack it in. But it's not that way at all. And I feel like there's just as many opportunities, maybe not immediately apparent, but I feel like there's just as many opportunities for people. And certain industries may not be booming like they once were. But I think if you have you have to have an interest in Japan. I think if you just come here to make money, I think that's a big mistake. I had an interest in Japan since I was a child. So for me, you know, it's been great. It's been great fun in addition to just a great experience all around. But anyway, I don't think any of those things should dissuade you, but I do think you should do your research and come here with some knowledge of what's going on and what, you know, and yes, it's an earthquake prone country. So just keep that in mind. If that's going to be an issue for you, then don't come.
Right. I definitely feel that there's still a lot of opportunities here, but like you said, you got to kind of hunt them out. They're not out in the open.
Not as much as they were.
Not as much as they were. But if someone is looking to come here, I would definitely recommend checking out your website and checking out your book called freelancingintokyo.com, because it lists a whole bunch of good information on how to get started here in regards to getting paid, saving money. Saving yen is always important. Language, all that kind of stuff. So if you are thinking about coming to Japan, I definitely recommend checking out freelancingintokyo.com.
Thank you.
And that's great. Thanks, David. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to David Chester for coming on the show. If you want to check out more of his stuff, look for freelancingintokyo.com. Not only is his book full of good information, but on his website as well, he's got helpful phrases, helpful websites, and he offers a consultation service where if you are new here, he'll sit down with you and point you in the right direction. I cannot stress enough how helpful it is to have someone who knows what's going on here in Tokyo to give you some pointers, because it's a really difficult city to try to figure out on your own. So if you are coming here, I definitely recommend checking out his book. Don't forget, if you're interested in having a good meal at the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. No, you can't say Bubba Gump without saying it with that southern accent, right? You can't just say Bubba Gump. You gotta say, Bubba Gump, run, Forrest, run! Okay, enough of that. check out the expatsguidetojapan.com, and their address is expatsguide.jp. Click on their Facebook page, click like on the post, and you will be entered to win a free meal at the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. That's it. This week's Tokyo Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. I am Anthony Joe, and bye-bye.